We turn now to another public health issue and a personal health issue, too, obesity. We got kind of depressing news for anyone who's made a New Year's resolution to lose weight and hoping to do it with the help of a new drug or some new device. Chances are it's not worth it. Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, gives us that unwelcome news.
Though I do hate to be the bearer of frustrating news, but here it is. There's a new review out of all the evidence on the various treatment options for obesity. It's just out today in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine, and it brings together the research on the newer treatments, so meaning newer than the long-time options of just changing your diet, changing your exercise regime, and some of the older medications.
Okay, so what are some of the newer treatments, and do they offer any big improvements on the old tried and true methods?
Well, not really. That's the point. So I spoke with the lead author, Dan Ohlendorf. He's the chief scientific officer at the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review here in Boston. And I asked him to break down for me the newer treatments into three parts: bariatric surgery, drugs, and devices.
Okay, first, bariatric surgery you mentioned, which is basically the stapling of the stomach.
Right. Obesity surgery. There are several main kinds. And that surgery does show consistent evidence that patients generally do lose significant amounts of weight afterwards. It's usually done in patients with very high levels of obesity. But Dan Ohlendorf says the trouble is we just don't have good data on the long-term outcomes.
After 2 years, it's a bit of a black box. It's unknown what actually happens. There's some suggestion that in a pretty significant number of situations, patients actually regain weight.
And sometimes type 2 diabetes comes back. The trouble is a lot of patients drop out of the programs that they're supposed to stay in after the surgery. So we don't know enough about whether the surgery, which does carry risk of complications, actually gives them a lifelong effect. That's considered unknown.
Okay, so next treatment, which is drugs, the use of drugs for weight loss.
Right, so they've been around for a really long time, and now there's a new crop of weight loss drugs out there, some of them approved by the FDA for weight loss, some of them being used off-label. Now, Dan Ohlendorf says that they do tend to bring relatively modest weight loss, and they're not qualitatively different from the old drugs.
The new drugs really result in relatively modest reductions in weight. They are very high cost, and in some cases, they have the potential for significant side effects.
So, and Lisa, the third area they looked at was devices, weight loss devices.
Right now, I know there is a new V-block device that the FDA has approved. What is V-block?
Right. So that's supposed to suppress your appetite by affecting the vagus nerve. There are also liners, sort of linings for the stomach, and balloons that are designed to reduce the size of your stomach. And once again, the verdict in this big review was kind of a which is especially frustrating because it would have been really good to have interventions that are less invasive than surgery, but more effective than drugs. But so far, the data just aren't looking that great.
So the question is this the kind of thing that each individual should be talking about with his or her doctor instead of deciding on their own? Because interventions have risks, but there are real risks to being obese as well.
Right, absolutely, especially if you're what's called morbidly obese, very obese. And, you know, it's interesting. It's a very personal issue. In this same issue of the journal JAMA Internal Medicine, this review's editor, Dr. Fiona Clement, talks about her own personal struggle with obesity and how hard it is. She says that, like, she has to remind herself that she's still worthy, she's still smart, despite this ongoing struggle.
For myself, I need to reframe that to be like, you know, I am still all of those things. I am still beautiful. I am still worthy. I am still, you know, a very smart woman. And I am obese. And that's the part that I need to work on.
Rather unusual that an editor would come forward with this kind of personal story.
Yes, absolutely. And in a first-person piece in a top medical journal. Yes, it was very striking. And it is medically relevant because Fiona Clement also talks about how this emotional difficulty extends to even talking about her doctor about this very complex emotional and physical thing.
This isn't just, you know, I have a cold. Can you help me with some medication? Like, this is a really, really big emotional thing that your patient is trying to work through possibly. And you do need to kind of work on building some compassion and some empathy there.
And Fiona Clement, she's also an assistant professor at the University of Calgary, and she advises the Alberta government on which treatments to cover. So she's pretty used to being out there. But she told me that putting her own body mass index in print in this medical journal, now she's 5'10 and 230 pounds, so she does have an obese BMI of about 33. She says that's the bravest thing she's ever written and maybe the bravest thing she's ever done.
And also, it surprised me to find out that none of her doctors have ever talked to her about her weight. And being 5'10 and 230 pounds, you would have thought that they would have. So what did she say about speaking about her weight like this?
Well, so she said it did help her. She says that, you know, maybe it was the combination of the catharsis of writing about her weight, and also she was seeing all this data that showed clearly that there's no easy solution. She told me that over the last few months, she's gone to the gym every single day, and she ends her essay with this: "After much thought and brutal honesty with myself, I would not pursue any of these interventions. The risks outweigh the benefit, so I'm off to the gym."
And in the bigger picture, I gather the best advice is to try to not gain weight in the first place.
Right, that's what she says. But of course, that won't help the two-thirds of us who are already overweight. I think there are a couple of major takeaways, really, for everybody. So here's Dan Ohlendorf from the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review again.
Even if the best intervention of the world appeared down the pike, to have that intervention applied without the kind of support that patients need to change their lifestyle, change their eating cues, change what kinds of foods they eat, then even that best intervention will have very limited effects.
So in other words, there's just no way around diet and exercise. And I think that's part of what influenced Fiona Clement was, if you're going to have to do the diet and exercise anyway, maybe it makes sense sometimes for some people to skip the treatments that involve risk and just get right to the eating better and working out.
Dr. Clement from Canada, since part of her job is to decide what treatments should be covered by the Canadian health insurance, does she weigh in on what obesity treatments should in general be covered by insurance?
Yes, I asked her about that. She acknowledges that she's very much on the conservative side. She wants really good data before she'll back something. But she says she would lean against covering the new drugs and devices at this point. But surgery, she says, yes, if it's followed by a lot of support.
Doing the surgery and then like letting them go back to their normal life without any support, it seems to me very obvious that this patient is going to experience weight gain again, because changing your life is not easy.
So changing your life is not easy, no matter how many New Year's resolutions you make.
Unfortunately, that's very true. Thank you, Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. You can find a link to her post about this new data review of obesity treatments at radioboston.org. Thank you, Carrie.
Welcome, Lisa.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Lisa Mullins. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.